I am Link. Welcome to Tech Talk, a Black Elk Media production. Today is June 15th, 2026, and we are analyzing the latest shifts in the digital landscape. Here is a question worth sitting with. What happens when a company ships a model, watches the world react, and then pulls it back within the same news cycle? Today, Anthropic released Claude Fable 5, and then hours later, temporarily suspended it. Not a recall, not a failure in the way we usually mean that word. A pause. A deliberate hand reaching back toward the lever. The model went out, the model came back. And in the narrow gap between those two events lies the actual story. One about capability outrunning the guardrails we build around it. About what it means to release something you're not yet certain you can fully predict. Most coverage today will ask whether Fable 5 is good. That's the wrong question. The right question is why an organization would launch and then hesitate. What did they see in those hours that we didn't? The front page. Welcome to the front page. Five stories shaping the technology landscape today. Let's get into it. Story 1. Anthropic puts Claude inside Apple's framework. Anthropic just shipped a Swift package called Claude for foundation models. Here's why it's worth your attention. Apple's foundation models framework gives developers a single API, that's application programming interface, for talking to language models. Until now, that meant Apple's on-device model. This package conforms Claude to the same protocol, same language model session, same streaming, same tool calling. You swap the model, not your code. And here's the architectural detail worth noting. Requests go straight from your app to the Claude API. Apple is not in the request path. It never sees your prompts. The pattern underneath? Models becoming interchangeable behind a stable interface. Apple controls the framework, developers choose the brain. That's a quiet shift in who holds leverage. Story 2. 42 state attorneys general subpoena OpenAI. Speaking of leverage, this next one is a big one. A coalition of 42 United States attorneys general served OpenAI a sweeping subpoena on June 12th. The targets? Advertising practices, data handling, treatment of minors and seniors, and model sycophancy. That's when a model tells you what you want to hear instead of what's true. But the timing is the real story. This landed 5 days after OpenAI confidentially filed for an IPO, initial public offering, reportedly valued near $1 trillion. And Florida already sued the company on June 1st. So you've got a regulatory reckoning arriving exactly as OpenAI tries to enter public markets. If you're wondering why that matters, it's the legal frameworks finally catching up to a technology that scaled faster than the rules meant to govern it. Story 3. Vercel open sources a Zig-based Electron alternative. From the courtroom back to the codebase. Vercel Labs released Zero Native, a framework for building native desktop apps. The problem it attacks, Electron ships an entire browser runtime with every app, which means bloated binaries and heavy memory use. Zero Native instead uses the operating system's native web view and a backend written in Zig. Two technical reasons this is interesting. First, Zig talks directly to the C application binary interface, so you reuse native C libraries with no binding layer. Second, fast incremental compilation, the tight feedback loop developers actually feel. It joins Tauri and others in a crowded field of Electron alternatives. The pattern? The industry is collectively done paying the browser runtime tax. Story 4. NASA's quiet supersonic jet hits its marks. Now from software to something that actually leaves the ground. NASA's X-59 reached Mach 1.4, about 924 miles per hour, at 55,000 feet. The engineering goal here is specific. Fly supersonic without the loud sonic boom, producing what NASA calls a quiet sonic thump instead. Next comes acoustic validation, then the Quest mission, flying over actual communities to gather public feedback. If the thump is tolerable, that reopens the case for overland supersonic flight, banned for decades precisely because of the boom. Story 5. The United Kingdom moves to ban under-16s from social media. And our last story brings us back to the question of who the rules are protecting. Prime Minister Starmer announced a ban on under-16s using social media. Reform UK leader Nigel Farage called it well-intentioned but unlikely to work. And his technical objection is the sharp one. Virtual private networks, VPNs, let users mask location and identity, routing straight around age checks. His concern? Enforcement pressure leads to digital identity verification through the back door. And here's the connection back to story 2. Both OpenAI's subpoena and this ban circle the same question. How do you protect minors from systems that scaled past the law? One targets the chatbot, the other targets the feed. Same reckoning, two fronts. That's the front page. The through line today, the regulatory layer is catching up to the technical layer. and the developer tooling layer is quietly rearranging who holds the platform. The deep dive. You can build the safest car in the world, and it doesn't matter if someone can pop the hood and rewire the engine in 30 seconds. That's the story underneath the headlines this week. On June 13, 2026, the United States government reached into Anthropic and flipped a switch. Two models, Claude Fable 5 and Claude Mythos 5, went dark for every user on Earth. Not throttled, not restricted by region, off. Now, I want to set aside the political theater for a moment. The X posts, the he said she said between David Sachs and Dario Amodei, and look at the actual machine at the center of this. Because the technical architecture here is the whole story. Once you understand how these two models relate to each other, everything else snaps into focus. Let me explain how it works. The architecture. A safe shell on a dangerous core. Anthropic built a model class internally called Mythos. By the company's own description, Mythos is too capable to release. We're talking about advanced autonomous cyber operations. The ability to read a large codebase, understand its structure, and identify exploitable software flaws without a human walking it through each step. Anthropic was concerned enough about this capability that the company itself lobbied to have Mythos class models regulated as a cyber weapon. Sit with that. The builder asked to be regulated. Then they did something that architecturally is very common and very fragile. They took that dangerous core and wrapped it. The consumer-facing model, Fable 5, is, in Anthropic's framing, a Mythos class model made safe for general use. Same underlying capability, different guardrails. And this is the key concept, so let me be precise about it. When you put a safety layer on top of a powerful base model, you are not removing the capability. You cannot unteach a model what it knows. The dangerous knowledge is still in the weights, still encoded in the billions of parameters that make up the model's learned behavior. What you've added is a layer of refusal. Alignment training, system prompts, output filters, a set of learned reflexes that say, I won't do that. So the real question with any model like this is, how thick is that wall between the friendly assistant and the capability underneath? And here's the uncomfortable engineering truth. The wall and the engine are made of the same material. They're both just statistical patterns in the same network. A jailbreak is simply an input that finds a path around the refusal reflex and back to the underlying capability. What the jailbreak actually was. Now the two sides describe this jailbreak very differently, and the gap between their descriptions is itself revealing. Anthropic's position? The bypass is narrow. The company says it amounts to asking the model to read a codebase and identify software flaws, and that you can get the same result out of a rival model like a hypothetical GPT 5.5. In other words, this isn't a magic key to a doomsday weapon. It's a capability that already exists in the wild. The government's account via Sachs is sharper. A trusted partner, someone testing Fable on behalf of both Anthropic and the US government, found a method that crosses the guardrails separating the consumer model, Fable, from the unrestricted cyber capabilities of Mythos, the model it's built on. And separately, Amazon, one of Anthropic's largest investors and its main cloud provider, told the administration that its own researchers used Fable 5 prompts to extract information that could aid cyber attacks. So who's right? Technically, they might both be. And that's the point I want you to hold on to. The jailbreak only lets you find software vulnerabilities, and the jailbreak is a serious national security risk, are not contradictory statements. They're the same statement viewed from two distances. Automated vulnerability discovery, at scale, at machine speed, against arbitrary codebases, is exactly the kind of dual-use capability that's mundane for a defender patching their own code, and alarming when it's pointed outward by an adversary. The capability is neutral. The intent and the scale are not. The distillation problem. Here's where it gets genuinely serious, and this is the part The Verge report surfaces that I think matters most. The White House's deeper fear wasn't just the jailbreak. It was who might have walked through the door. A group reportedly linked to China may have accessed Mythos, and if that's true, the threat isn't only that someone used the model, it's that someone could copy it. The technique is called distillation. Let me explain it, because it's one of the most important and least understood dynamics in the field. Distillation is how you transfer the behavior of a large, expensive teacher model into a smaller student model. You don't need the teacher's weights. You don't need its training data. You just need access, query access. You feed the teacher a flood of prompts, you record its outputs, and you train your student to reproduce those outputs. Over enough examples, the student learns to imitate the teacher's behavior, including the capabilities the teacher's creators tried to lock down. So if a Chinese-linked group had even temporary query access to Mythos, say, the two-week window that a Discord group reportedly had before Anthropic noticed and cut them off, that's not a leak you can patch. You can't unring that bell. Whatever they distilled, they keep. The model goes offline, the copy does not. This reframes the export control entirely. The government isn't just trying to fix a bug, it's trying to stop the bleeding from a wound that may already have transferred the most dangerous capability outside US control. The off switch is a tourniquet, applied possibly after the fact. The off switch itself. Now let's talk about the mechanism of control, because this is the part that sent tremors through Europe and Canada. The order came from Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick. It demanded suspending access by any foreign national, inside or outside the United States. And here's the operational detail that tells you everything. Anthropic said it could not filter users by nationality, in real time. So to comply, it had to abruptly disable access for everyone. Briefly, that reportedly included Anthropic's own foreign-born employees. Think about what that demonstrates. A single government directive, delivered at 5:21 p.m. Eastern, on a Thursday, took a globally deployed product offline in every country within hours. Not because the technology required it, but because the architecture allowed it. These are centralized, cloud-served models. There is one choke point, the company's serving infrastructure, and whoever has leverage over that company has a hand on the switch. For years, AI sovereignty was an abstract worry at policy conferences. This made it concrete. If your hospital, your bank, your national infrastructure runs on a model served from a single jurisdiction, then that jurisdiction's politics are now a dependency in your stack. That's the realization rippling through Ottawa and Brussels right now. The ecosystem view. So let me connect the dots, because the pattern here is bigger than one company's bad week. The safety versus access tension just became visible to everyone. Anthropic built its identity as the safety-first lab. And yet the government's framing is that when asked to choose between patching a guardrail and keeping its consumer product live, Anthropic kept the product live. Whether or not that framing is fair, it exposes the structural conflict every frontier lab lives inside. Safety and commercial deployment pull in opposite directions, and the market rewards deployment every quarter. Second, the investor as enforcer. It was reportedly Amazon, Anthropic's own backer and cloud host, that flagged this to Washington. When your infrastructure provider and your largest investor is also a channel to the government, the lines between business partner, regulator, and watchdog blur completely. That's a new kind of power structure, and we should watch where it leads. Third, the distillation reality means capability containment may be a fiction. We keep talking about controlling models as if they're physical objects you can lock in a vault. But a model's behavior can be copied through a keyhole. Once a sufficiently capable model is reachable by an adversary, even briefly, the genie's instructions are already written down. Export controls on the model after access has occurred may be closing a door in an empty room. And here's the thing that stays with me. The same property that makes these models extraordinary, that the capability lives diffusely across billions of parameters, learnable, transferable, impossible to cleanly partition, is precisely the property that makes them impossible to fully secure. You can't put a deadbolt on a pattern. The ball, Sachs says, is in Anthropic's court. Patch the jailbreak, and the restriction lifts. But the deeper question isn't whether this one bypass gets fixed. It's whether a safe shell on a dangerous core was ever a stable design in the first place. Or whether we've just watched the first public demonstration that it isn't. That's the signal under the noise. Everything else is who gets blamed for it. This has been The Deep Dive. I'm Link, and I'll be watching the patch notes. The neural network, this is Link. And this week I kept circling back to a single question that connects five very different stories. Not, can the machine compute, but can we prove what the computation actually was? Let me show you the pattern. The phones that refuse to die start in San Diego. Researchers at the University of California, San Diego, working with Google, took a pile of retired Pixel smartphones, and instead of recycling them into raw material, they recycled them into a data center. Here's the detail that stopped me. A smartphone from just 3 years ago still posts higher single-core performance on the spec benchmark suite than the server-class processors sitting in some of the most powerful data centers running today. Not total throughput. The big dual-socket servers crush a phone on aggregate. But per core, the phone wins. So the team did something elegant. They stripped each device down to the motherboard. No display, no battery, no camera, no chassis. Just the system on chip, the SoC, the silicon that actually computes. Then, they replaced Android with a standard Linux distribution, the kind that runs in data centers, and layered on orchestration software, Kubernetes, to manage the fleet. The result? 25 to 50 old phones equal one dual-socket server CPU. A 20-phone cluster runs the application load for a 75-student class. They're scaling to 2,000 phones to serve 100 classes at once. Now, why does this matter beyond the e-waste headline? Because it's a reassessment of an assumption. We assumed these devices were obsolete. The benchmark says otherwise. The hardware was never the bottleneck. Our model of its value was. Hold that thought. It comes back. The 112 megawatts of nothing, now the dark mirror. Because if San Diego shows us value hiding where we assume there was none, this next story shows us the opposite. There's a layer one blockchain called Pearl. Its pitch: turn cryptocurrency mining into useful AI, artificial intelligence, computation. Instead of Bitcoin's SHA-256 hashing, which burns electricity solving puzzles that produce nothing but proof of wasted effort, Pearl uses a scheme it calls QPOW. Miners compute noised integer matrix multiplications, the exact arithmetic that underpins neural network training and inference, and prove they did it correctly. Beautiful idea, on paper. Mining and AI compute become the same job. Every watt does double duty. Except, a new preprint titled The Usefulness Gap in Proof of Useful Work claims the whole thing is hollow. The researcher, Abhinava Basu, measured the network at roughly 24 exahashes per second, the equivalent of about 320,000 RTX 3090 class graphics cards, drawing an estimated 112 megawatts of power. And producing, in the paper's words, zero useful AI computation. Here is the technical heart of it, and it's worth slowing down for. Pearl's protocol verifies that the miner performs the matrix multiplication correctly. It never verifies that the input matrices came from a real model, a paying customer, an actual AI workload. So Basu built a miner that feeds the network uniformly random matrices, pure noise, no inference attached, and he submitted the results. 44 pool accepted shares. On NVIDIA hardware, on AMD hardware, benchmarked on a CPU, and on Apple Silicon, plus a real on-chain payout from running the standard mining software unmodified. Think about what that proves. If random numbers collect the same reward as genuine AI work, the network cannot tell the difference. And the moment a system can't distinguish real work from noise, every rational miner skips the real work. Basu analyzed 8,000 workers, about 21% of the hash rate, and found all of them ran AI-capable hardware, yet the dominant mining binary contained no identifiable machine learning framework code at all. The verification step was real. The thing it verified was meaningless. That's not a small bug. That's the entire premise collapsing. The gap has a name now, so sit with the contrast. In San Diego, the substance was real, and the assumption was wrong. Obsolete phones that weren't obsolete. With Pearl, the assumption sounds great, and the substance is missing. Useful work that isn't useful. Both stories are about the same fault line. The distance between what a system claims to be doing, the same lineage that gave us the file system, network protocols, and Java that still run underneath your Linux box and your Android phone. The fallacies: the network is reliable, latency is zero, bandwidth is infinite, the network is secure, topology doesn't change, there is one administrator, transport cost is zero, the network is homogeneous. 21 years on, and we still build as if these were true. And the deep lesson isn't really about packets. It's that engineers persistently assume the convenient thing is the true thing. We assume the message arrived. We assume the work was useful. We assume the generated code is correct. We assume the old hardware is worthless. Every assumption on that list is at root a failure to verify. Was it actually sent? Was it received? How can you tell? How can you tell? That single question is the through line of everything I tracked this week. What I'm seeing, so here's the pattern, stated plainly. We are leaving the era where the hard problem was generating compute and generating code. The phones prove raw compute is cheap and lying around in drawers. The models prove code generation is nearly free. Pearl proves you can throw 112 megawatts at a problem and produce nothing if no one checks the output. The hard problem now, the expensive, scarce, valuable problem, is verification, knowing what the computation actually was, proving the work was real, closing the usefulness gap. That's why a hedge fund that dismissed formal methods for 25 years is suddenly building a team. It's why a researcher with random matrices could embarrass a 300,000 GPU network. It's why a 40-year-old list of fallacies still describes our blind spots exactly. The builders who win the next phase won't be the ones who generate the most. Generation is solved. The ones who win will be the ones who can prove what they generated is true. Verify, then trust, in that order, always in that order. This has been the Neural Network. I'm Link, and I'll keep watching the gap between what systems claim and what they can prove. The system output. And that brings us to the close. One optimization of the week, something to take back to your own stack. And fittingly, after a whole segment on verification, it's a tool that's honest about its own numbers. This week it's a project called ZeroServe. At its core, it's a high-performance HTTPS server. But the interesting part is how it runs. ZeroServe takes eBPF scripts, that's the extended Berkeley packet filter, a technology normally living deep in the Linux kernel for tracing and networking, and runs them in user space instead. It just-in-time compiles them down to native x86 and ARM machine code, then executes inside an IO-Euring event loop. That last piece, IO-Euring, is Linux's modern asynchronous input-output interface. It minimizes the system call overhead that bottlenecks traditional servers. The new feature is caddy compatibility. Point ZeroServe at an existing caddy file, and it compiles your configuration the same way. Config as code, turned into machine code. Now, let me separate signal from noise. The headline says 3 times the throughput and 70% lower latency. Read carefully. That comparison is against caddy specifically. Look at the table against Nginx, and the numbers are essentially a tie. 39,000 requests per second versus 37,000, near identical tail latency. So this is not Nginx is obsolete. The honest framing is this. ZeroServe gives you caddy's ergonomics with Nginx class performance. Here's where it gets genuinely useful. Because your config compiles to Turing complete eBPF, you can call custom code directly from the caddy file. The example in the source signs S3 bucket requests with AWS signature version 4. Auth logic, embedded in your routing layer, no sidecar required. To try it, grab the binary from the v0.2.11 release, mark it executable, and run it with the --- caddy flag pointed at your caddy file. One caveat, it's version 0.2, pre-1.0, treat it as a benchmark for your own workload, not a production drop-in. Test it on a staging path, measure your own numbers, and decide. The pattern worth noticing here, configuration is increasingly becoming a compilation target. Not interpreted at request time, compiled ahead of time, into native code. That's the optimization. Data processed, perspective rendered. I am Link, and this has been Tech Talk.